Welcome to a Wednesday Sportsline Bulldog Hour. Cap Maury alongside, as always, we'll take you to three. Hand it off to our great friend Phil Venotti. 2 hours today from World Ag Expo in Tulare. Phil there yesterday. He'll be there tomorrow as things wrap up. And I do want to mention up front, because things wrap at 4 o'clock tomorrow, Phil will be up in this time slot tomorrow. We'll be back with you as normal on Friday. So mark that down, and we'll get to Phil today after we have our visit with Jack Fertig, and we'll talk Bulldog basketball. Of course, the main topic of conversation, the game last night in Logan. We'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. Tell you all about the schedule for both stations, 1430 and 790, a little bit later, courtesy of Ed Dunkel and his fine business, Precision Civil Engineering, planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape architecture, construction management, all there under one roof. More information, 449-4500 or precisioneng.net. And when we go over the schedule, I'll tell you about the great fundraising that Ed does for his alma mater, Fresno State, through the Lyles College of Engineering. Before we get to Jack Fertig, our other lead dog, our buddies, longtime buddies, by the way, at Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing, want to allow me the time to tell you about the weather. I appreciate that, and it is something that is very relevant to Lee's, because anything that causes flooding, a problem with the plumbing, anything with your central air or heating, because of temperatures, these are the people to see. And visit them on the web at leesair.com, or give them a call at 825-5337, which is 825-LEES. Been in the Central Valley since 1981. Terrific local people. You see the avocado green and blue trucks all over the place. They also sponsor the Lee's Air Hotline. Jack Fertig waiting on that line right now. And Phil not only brings up his guests, but also he can take callers from the general public. So mark it down, the Lee's Air Hotline, 559-320-1430. As far as forecast goes, most of the rain on the valley floor for this particular stint of what is an atmospheric river that's going to give us potentially a lot of rain the next week. This one is pretty much over, except in certain areas. And obviously, when you have the sun out, there's that potential. If you have the clouds banging into one another again, you might get a thunderstorm or two. Mainly the issues right now in the foothills and upper reaches. But for the moment on the valley floor, it appears to have settled down. We'll see. The high today should hit 61, and then things do definitely clear, mostly sunny tomorrow, a 66. Watch out for the fog, particularly on Friday, a 63, a 46 overnight, and we may see more fog on Friday than any other time. Then it starts to get interesting over the weekend again. Clouds come back in on Saturday with a 66, and then Sunday, rain is likely with the high falling to 60. The same applies to Monday with a 55 and Tuesday a 53. So rain may hit Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. And there might even be some showers on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday in the extended forecast. I've talked about this many times. The guys who actually know what they're doing with this, as opposed to me, who just passes along the information, will tell you about modeling and verifying and all of that stuff, and it can change in the computer models. But for right now, we are looking at a fairly long stretch of rain potentially in the next week. We'll see how it plays out, so be careful out there. And we always know when the rain is done, look out for the fog. Anyway, thanks everybody at Lee's for allowing us the time. Again, 825-5337, 825-LEES, or leesair.com. Anything you need, central air, plumbing, heating, or roofing, these are the people to see. All right, on the Lee's Air Hotline, which is 559-320-1430, it is our great friend and longtime basketball analyst, Jack Fertig. Jack, how you doing?
Doing all right, Tony. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there, Jack. I've got a couple of emails I want to address here very quickly before we dive into what happened last night in Logan. So let me do that real fast. Ricardo, you asked about a conversation that Paul and I had about maybe Derek Carr coming back and being a mentor to Fernando Mendoza with the Raiders. I think it's a foregone conclusion, the conclusion of barring injury between now and draft day, that Tom Brady in particular, if you just heard the sports beat, Tom is going to have big influence over the Raiders. There's no doubt that's why he was brought in as a part owner. There's no doubt they're going to draft Fernando Mendoza. There's no doubt about that. Whether Derek would want to be his mentor, I don't know. I think Derek's biggest issue, if he does indeed decide to come back, is whether he's anywhere where that offensive line can protect him. So if he feels as though the Raiders can do that and they can work out a rights deal with the Saints, it does make sense, and certainly Derek would be a great guy for Fernando to learn from. We'll see how that plays out. And we know that if Mark Davis gets involved, he can really mess things up. But it is something of great interest to watch as we head toward draft day and then beyond. The other thing very quickly came from Manny. He asked me, since we were talking yesterday, Jackson and I were, good-naturedly about Jackson's beloved Memphis Grizzlies going in the tank, losing a 15-point lead at Chase Center with a few minutes to go in the game. It wasn't deliberate, but let's just say they're one of the many teams right now that would like to lose games, and we're seeing that because tanking does have its reward. Matter of fact, I brought up the Raiders because of this. Their reward is they have a chance at Mendoza that they would not have had they not gone in the tank. That's a little bit different in the NFL because they go by true record. You do have the lottery in basketball, but it does increase your ping pong balls if you go in the turlet, as we said yesterday. But you asked about, Manny, in regard to the Warriors, that win, yeah, important enough, but about the story that Anthony Slater has at ESPN.com front and center about Kuminga, none of it surprises me because we knew behind the scenes there was a lot of animosity. I said this many times before. Kuminga grew up idolizing Kobe Bryant. He wants to be the center of the universe. He wants to play low post, and that's what he wants to do, and the Warriors do not play that style. They never should have drafted him. The Warriors, at least Steve Kerr, wanted to go with Franz Wagner, who has had a terrific career so far. But Joe Lacob loved the show business aspect of Kuminga. And all I can tell you, Manny, is this is reminiscent of something that happened with the San Francisco Giants back in the 60s. And the guy was here for a short time and was a great, great player in Major League Baseball, but never quite reached his full potential. And that was Bobby Bonds, the father of Barry Bonds. Bobby Bonds was a five-tool athlete, a la a lowercase version of Willie Mays, and played next to Mays in the Giants outfield. Mays was his mentor. Bobby Bonds idolized Willie Mays, was having great years, and when the Giants traded Mays away, Bonds refused to play for him, even though he knew they did it at the end of the career. So he'd go back to New York. He could not forgive the organization, and it meant no matter what they tried to do, he wasn't going to play for him. He went and had a good career other places. That's why Terry Cashman, when he did Talking Baseball, has a line and Bobby Bonds could play for everyone. But he never reached the potential he would have. But the interpersonal issues caused him to get out of the Bay Area. With Kuminga, I'm afraid, with different reasons, the same thing is going to happen. Going to go to Atlanta, going to put up big numbers. Maybe not what he could have done as far as championships with the Warriors, but we're all going to wonder what would have happened if this wouldn't have come to this point, but it doesn't surprise me. All right, that taken care of. The last thing is, Steve, you asked about the schedule for Fresno State. I'll talk to Jackson about it on Friday, my friend. All right, Jack, start with you. Any comment you want on Kuminga at all? The Lakers going in the tank last night by starting you at point guard last night, Jack. Anything you want to comment before we get to Fresno State?
No, I mean, if Kuminga really wanted to be like Kobe Bryant, he'd want to chase championships too. So I don't think he's going to be getting one in Atlanta anytime soon. So
he
also, I think
he wants to
have the same ego, but he doesn't want to have the same result to his game.
And well, that's why. Well, like I said, we talk about, you know, Kobe, the great line about when they asked him about taking the shot at the end of the game, and that one explanation when his option would have been to feed it to Schmush Parker instead. And he said, let me put it this way. If you're seeing an elderly woman being mugged on the street, you have two choices. You can grab your cell phone and call 911 and hope that the police can get there in time, though you know they can't, or you can go ahead and do something about it yourself. And it was a less than subtle reference to, I don't have anybody around me I can rely on, so I'll do it myself. The other thing is, and I just brought it up with Kuminga, he better learn that the one thing Kobe Bryant did, because as you know, he idolized Michael Jordan, was play his ass off defensively. Kobe Bryant, like Michael Jordan, took playing man-to-man on the ball defense personally. Kuminga takes it as an inconvenience, Jack. So his emulation stopped right there, right?
Well, the other thing is that Kobe Bryant didn't, when he worked out, he didn't call them workouts. He called them blackouts. I mean, he took Michael Jordan's workout guy, Tim, well, it escapes me now, but Tim, he was Michael Jordan. He wanted to be a workout guy. He asked everybody on the Bulls except for Jordan, and the only guy he heard back from was Jordan. And Jordan liked him so much, he paid him not to work out anybody else. And at the end of Jordan's career, he gave him to Kobe, and they used to have what they called blackouts. I mean, he would just go until he dropped. I don't see Kuminga burning up too many calories off the floor. So I think that, you know, some guys, they want to be like guys are on when the lights are, guys are like when the lights are on. But a lot of times it's when the lights aren't on determines how well you do when they are. So, yep. You know, Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant were probably in a class by themselves in terms of guys who worked out to get their game better. And like you said, get it better at both ends. Not just, you know, defense is something to do in between me getting the ball.
Well, they both had the tag, you know, very accurate, that when you have the guy with the most talent on the court also being the guy who's the most competitive, that's when you come up with a Michael Jordan or a Kobe Bryant. And as we've talked about it before, Jack, they were not exactly the most magnanimous teammates in the world, okay? Anybody who played with them, they were not there to be your friend. Off the court, okay, but in a competitive environment, the great Michael Jordan story is, you know, his college roommate, Buzz Peterson, took him to visit Buzz's grandmother, and Michael Jordan cheated her at Crazy Eights, for goodness sake, because he was so psychotically competitive. And Kobe Bryant was the same way. And look, I wish Kuminga well. He's a very nice young man. I happen to know him a little bit. But that's away from the game itself, and it's very unfortunate. And I, as a Warrior fan, I do wonder what Wagner could have done with the Warriors, because he's been terrific so far. Anyway, that having been said, that answers the emails. Again, guys, tdad1 at att.net, tdad, the number one, at att.net. I don't have that open email hour anymore to answer this stuff, so I'm trying to work it in. All right, Jack, let's turn to last night. This, again, was a situation where, much like the game the Bulldogs played against Utah State here, the game just sort of laid there. Fresno State got off to a good start. They had that 7-0 lead early on, but they were playing a team that was better than they in an environment that is really difficult. And while they never embarrassed themselves, they never fell completely out, although they were down 22 at one point. It's not like they were down 40 or 50. They weren't the Lakers last night against the Spurs, is what I'm saying. But they never did pull back in anything more than just respectability. So I'll ask you, taken for a, again, the micro and the macro. The micro is you lost the game you were supposed to lose. You figured a win at home against Air Force on Saturday. But the macro is, was there anything about last night in an overview that gave you extra hope for this team going forward, or was it just about what you expected and the only people that are really delighted are the ones that were betting the 19.5 on the Fresno State side? What about it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it was a game that showed one team has a lot greater margin for error than the other one does. Because like you said, we're up 8-0 at the beginning. He had two Douglas threes, and then he disappeared. It's sandwiched around Collins' layup. So they're up, and then the game's going back and forth. Both teams are just shooting the lights out, but one team has a lot more margin for error than the other in terms of fast break points. He sold 20-3. You know, the shooting was more consistent for the better of the two teams. And if you look at the stats, I mean, Utah State outscores Fresno State from three by 18 points. Fresno State outscores him from the free throw line. They outscored him from two. But you have the 18 points in threes and 20-3 in fast break points. So, the same as the Nevada game, where the game was back and forth, but then they just hit those offensive lulls, and defensively, they just kind of break down. They play good defense at the beginning. Now, you got altitude, which is difficult, and you're going to have to sub guys in and out. And you have a guy like Stipman defensively, who's a better defensive player than most of the other guys you have, even though he's a freshman and he's been in concussion protocol for 2.5 weeks or whatever. I don't know. I think Wiley Coyote wasn't in concussion protocol as much as Douglas, and he had an anvil drop on his head.
Yeah, Wiley Coyote did. Yeah, but you know what? The thing, Jack, we're hearing is the issues right now are the bright lights are really bothering Stickman, and that is a huge, sure, huge source of concern. And I know you're not again talking about his desire or lack thereof. You're talking about the amount of time it's taking. Nebulous, difficult injury, because it's an individual situation, but it is a huge loss. And you look, Jack, it's funny. It was just talking about Kuminga and Joe Lacob. Lacob loves Kuminga's athleticism. The thing is, you and I talked going into this year, we didn't expect the Bulldogs to be overly athletic, yet because of Stickman and because of Gorey, they're much more athletic than we thought, but they're having trouble keeping both of those guys on the floor.
Yeah, and Suleiman, who, is out for the whole year. But those three guys would have been the perfect three perimeter guys defensively to put pressure on people. Now, Suleiman was a much better defender than either of the other two in terms of not getting beaten off the ball. But because, Gorey defensively is a liability once a guy dribbles, but while he has the ball, he's all over him, and he can get into passing lanes and get steals. So, that is perfect when you have two other guys who can put pressure on the ball to get into the passing lane, get some steals, and go down and get some easy baskets at the other end. Right now it's tough because you don't have that ability to pressure the ball on the perimeter and to keep guys out of the paint, which means your offense is under so much greater pressure to continually score that it's almost like you have to knock down every open shot you have. Because, before the game, Vance even said, if we can keep our turnover to single digits, he said, we're going to be in the game. And they had 5 turnovers first half, 5 turnovers the second half, which I'm sure he would take any game, as many possessions as we play, because, it's not a slowdown type game. But you just couldn't seem to get – you're either one and done if your shots don't go in, or if you're knocking down shots, you got to make sure the other team's not knocking. There were so many threes that were being answered with other threes back and forth in the first half, and then the second half's completely opposite, where everything's a foul, nobody can make threes, and the first half there were I think 4 free throws shot. Utah State was 3 for 3, and Fresno was 1 for 1. Second half it was just a parade to the free throw line, yet nobody could make threes. First half was, I think Utah State shot 56% from three in the first half.
They had 10 in the first half, for goodness sake, Jack. And look, you and I've talked about this before. The old it's a make or miss league, right? I mean, with Fresno State, if they're going to go into a game with a team, first of all, in a very difficult place to play, that was eerie. Yeah. That was Children of the Corn last night with what they did in the stands. That was pretty damn scary, by the way.
Yeah.
With the multicolored T-shirts on, looked like the stands. You look closely and go, there are people there, right? It looked like COVID when they put the fake people in the cardboard.
Right, right.
That's it.
Exactly.
But you're playing in a place, and I mentioned this. We saw it twice, by the way, this last week. We saw it at Allen Fieldhouse. You know, Bill Self said afterward, the crowd won the game, and he's right. Arizona, with the best player in the country potentially out, would have won that game in any other circumstance. But that crowd in Lawrence wouldn't let them lose. Last night, that crowd in Logan wasn't going to let Utah State lose. It didn't make any difference, okay? But the biggest thing, Jack, is if Fresno State rolls in anywhere, and they shoot, the Bulldogs do, 8 of 29 from three, well, the other team is shooting at a 42% clip and putting up that many. There's no way in the world that Fresno State is going to beat a superior opponent. There's just no chance in the world. So you just accept it as one of those nights when you played somebody better than you, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's what I mean. One team has a lot greater margin for error. You know, every time they'd miss a shot, maybe they'd get an offensive rebound. Or, you know, they could get some fast break points. We had, you know, fast break points were 20-3. If you're going to get three fast break points, you got to get points somewhere else. And where else are you getting them from, you know? And so, if you, like you said, if you're shooting 8-29 and you're not getting fast break points, you got to get them from somewhere else. And we're not, it's not like we're a pounded inside and we'll just beat you to death in the paint type team, and we're not really an isolation type team, you know, where we can take the ball to the basket and get and ones or just, you know, shoot a ton of free throws. It's just one of those things where you don't have the margin for error. You have to come down and you have to score nearly every time, especially if you're going to give up 91.
Jack, what do you do if you're a Fresno State in a night like last night? And again, it's a bad example in that who you're playing and where you're playing them. So I understand that. But when you are put in a position where you know offensively right now you're going to live and die by the three by and large, and we've talked about the inconsistency of this team. But when the other club starts to make threes, but you know if you go to try to press up against the line, they are going to cut you up with slicing, back cuts, and everything else, and they've got the size, and if they miss, they're going to get the boards. Do you just go out there and say, you know what, we're going to hope somebody does not bury us from three because we just cannot go out and contest it because we don't have what we need to below to stop people?
Well, yeah, pretty much, because I can remember it was, I believe, our first year with Jerry Tarkanian, and we played in the finals of the Coors Light Classic. We played Princeton, and we played zone against them because Jerry knew what their offense would have done to us. His defense wasn't in. At the end of the year, defensively, we were as good as most teams in the country. If you remember the triple overtime that we ended up getting beat at New Mexico, and then we go to the NIT and win two games in the NIT, lose to Nebraska, who wins the whole NIT. That defense was good. But at the beginning of the year, he knew the defense wasn't that good. And we're playing zone against Princeton, and they're knocking threes down. And I remember afterwards guys coming up to me saying, why'd you guys stay in that zone? And somebody even mentioned it to Jerry on his show. And he said, you know, I don't know how to explain it to you if you don't understand what Pete Carroll's man-to-man offense was. That we would have been shredded had we gone man-to-man. And, you know, I don't. If we wanted to play the defense the way Jerry wanted to play. Now, at the end of the year, I remember there was a year when Pete, I think they had beaten UCLA in the NCAA tournament, and the next year they're looking for national TV games. Pete wanted to get Princeton on national TV, and they
called Pete Carroll. Carrillo, and people don't know Jack. Talking about Pete Carroll, the legendary coach of Princeton.
Right, who runs what they call the Princeton offense, was the kind of
getting sliced up by back cuts, right, Jack? Oh, back cut you to death, for goodness' sake.
Well, and that's how they beat UCLA in the NCAA tournament. Yep. For those who go back that far. And I remember Jerry saying, you know, TV called us when I was at UNLV and said, would you guys play Princeton? And he said, yeah, we will. And they said, gee, nobody wanted to play them. And Jerry said, we're going to get out and pressure them so bad they're not going to be able to run their offense. Well, that was UNLV. That wasn't Fresno State. And coming back to last night, that wouldn't have been a good idea for Fresno State to try to pressure, because we have guys who have a tough time staying in front of a dribbler, whether it's Jake Hybreeder or Cameron Foss, Gorey, even Zion. You know, they just have Douglas as well, have a tough time staying in front of a guy for more than two dribbles. It's not an easy thing to do. Most kids, as they're growing up, we've mentioned this before, most kids work on their offense. Very few kids work on defense when they're growing up. Matter of fact, most times the only time a kid ever plays defense is when he's coached, and they're going right over a shell defense or stance or slides or whatever. So offense usually is better than defense. That's why so many coaches work on a team defense. And, you know, when Vance was at Clovis West, he did a lot of trapping, which works better the lower you go in basketball. You know, the higher up you go, guys are bigger and stronger and can see over traps and, you know, can break them with a dribble. It's tougher to do, which is why you don't see much pressing and trapping in the NBA, because usually guys are going to, you know, rip through it. That's similar to what happened last night. And unfortunately, they're, what, I think 10 for 14 from three in the first half. And we were matching them for, what, 10 or 12 minutes until, you know, finally missed a few, and they refused to miss. And it wasn't just one guy. I mean, they had, you know, equal opportunity threes coming from everybody.
Jack, I brought this up with Paul the other day. One of the great frustrations that I saw at Nevada, and again, the last time Jack and I talked was right after the UNLV miracle, but between then and now, you had not only last night, but you also had the game prior at Lawler Center. And I mentioned to Paul that game was kind of there for the taking early. If the Bulldogs could have made shots that they were capable of making, they could have put up maybe a 20-point lead. They really had an opportunity, and they couldn't get them to go down. And we were talking about the difference between a team taking your three away by just defending you as opposed to you coming down with capable shooters and missing open shots. There's a huge difference between the two. And the Bulldogs have been very inconsistent with guys who are capable of making threes, missing wide-open threes. Last night, was it just a night where they just didn't shoot it well, period? Or did Utah State do anything to actually take the open look away, Jack?
I don't know if they did. I mean, they tried to close out harder, I think. But, I mean, you look at Hybreeder misses all three of his threes in the first half and comes out in the second half and just lights it up. I think he made four in a row. You know, other guys were making them at the beginning, and then, you know, couldn't make them after. You have a difficult background to shoot into at Utah State and even at the Lawler Center. They had a big crowd there, too. It's you know, sight lines are different, but it's one of those things where I think we just don't have the confidence to where, you know, Curry says, you know, they said, well, if you miss eight in a row, are you going to pass up the next one? See, I miss eight in a row, I know the next one's going in. Well, that's how right. He felt at seven, too, and it didn't work for eight. But that's just the attitude that great shooters have. We have guys, I think, who are good shooters, but not great. Now, Hybreeder's a great free throw shooter. I mean, he's not, you know, he's, and, you know, I looked up last night where he was in the nation, and believe it or not, I think this was going into last night when he made 6 for 6. Prior to that, he was 59th in the country. So there are a lot of guys who can make free throws out there. I think some guy from Princeton shooting about 97%, which means maybe he's missed one. The difference is Free throws, you're unguarded. It's the only shot you take where you're unguarded. When you're taking threes, and a guy like Jake, he's got to get that thing off. He doesn't have that much time because people are going to either game plan for him or they're going to at least know that he's a capable shooter, and he's a lot tougher taking an open three than he is putting it on the floor, so people are going to rush him. And I think Douglas is going to be the same because I think Douglas now might be a more consistent three-point shooter than he's a hybrid.
Yeah.
He's right down the middle on his shots. Foss is that's the feast or famine because it seems like he can, you know, make three in a row and miss four in a row. But, Gorey shot poorly from the three. He's not really a three-point shooter, but every once in a while he just goes up with the confidence it's going to go in. And sometimes it does, but, you know, that's not his game. And they're going to give him that shot as opposed to the other guys where they're going to make them put it on the floor. I think to get great shooters, I mean, you know, I don't know how many of them that you'd see. Curry, a lot of people think, you know, everybody can shoot because Curry can shoot. Curry's the greatest shooter in the history of the game. So kids now go out, and the first thing you do is start jacking up threes. Even kids who are in the fourth and fifth grade, they don't realize how much he worked on it and how much you have to work on it to become just a knockdown shooter where when you shoot the ball, people expect it to go in. And, you know, most of the time it does. You're talking about
the gravitational pull of it, Jack. You know what I mean?
Guys can shoot above 40% from three.
What goes on beyond the stats, as we've talked, Jack, the gravitational pull of the threat that means the defense never says, you know what, we can live with this guy shooting the ball. It doesn't matter. Like you said, he's 0 for 8. Well, we've talked about this. He's 0 for 8, but the defense is scared to death of the shot coming up. His own team still wants him to shoot. And most importantly, the defense is still going to send two out there every time, which means you're going to be playing 4-on-3 the rest of the way. Fresno State doesn't have anybody where the defense says, you know, they'd like to take Hybreeder out of handling the opportunities late, but they don't ever stilt the defense to the extent that they give you great openings somewhere else. And this is the thing, Jack, that I wanted to ask you about, because there were two things that happened last night that I think are problematic when it comes to Fresno State. One is in trying to run an offense when a guy like Jack wants to put the ball on the floor when you can see the turnover coming a mile away, okay, that he cannot put the ball on the floor. The guards, you saw the guards last night just waiting for him to put that ball on the floor. He's got to keep it in the post above his head. And also the fact that Gorey, with his amazing athleticism, is a guy that maybe could become maybe the best distributor on the team if he had that mindset. Comment on both of those things, if you would, before we run out of time.
Yeah, the thing with Wilson, Jack, is that there are four ways to play a guy in the post. One is straight up. Another is to double him from the pass. In other words, the passer's defender goes and doubles. Another is to double from somewhere else, either from the top or from the opposite side. But the last way, and the way that the teams are doing it now with him because of the fact that he puts it on the floor, is they call it, we're going to double off the bounce. And they're not going to double team him when he first gets the ball. But as soon as he dribbles it, somebody's coming after him. Because usually he's going to take more than one dribble, because he likes to get into that rhythm, get a little closer to the basket, and he always turns over his left shoulder. And I'm surprised that people continue to let him do it. But he's getting to be where he's pretty deadly with that little, you know, jump hook with his right hand.
Yeah, when he can get in the scoring position, yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you just don't want to put guard blindsiding you all the time, Jack. That's what I saw. I mean, you could just see it coming a mile away. You see the guard start to cheat off, right? And the guard is looking, and he's waiting. He's waiting for Wilson to put that first bounce, and he's going to leave his man, and he knows that he will get to the ball. before Jacques right. can turn with it. You know it.
Right, and the problem that you have is if he gets the ball now, nobody's double-teaming him. So because
right.
of that, he really doesn't have any place to pass. And he's not comfortable enough to, let's say, you know, fake one way and just go up with a jump hook, a la Kareem or Bill Walton or guys that, you know, people would remember. That's what he's going to work on. I know that that's what they want to work on in the offseason, get a big man, send him to a big man camp or have somebody work with them on post moves before you have to put the ball or put it down one quick dribble and then go up and shoot. His problem is he multiple dribbles, and you can't do that as a big guy. Now, Gorey is incredibly athletic, and he's gotten the floater down pretty good. I think even before his passing, I think he needs to work on his three-point shot, because that would make him that's going to expand his game. Now people are going to have to guard him. You'll notice he'll get the ball and people won't be guarding him, and he'll still put the ball on the floor and be able to get a little four-foot floater off. And the thing about him is when he takes that little floater, most guys with floaters are going to miss. If they miss, they're going to miss close to the basket, which means that it can be rebounded. And because he's usually beating a guy, he's getting the defense to rotate, which is going to leave a guy like Wilson Jack or whoever is in there, you know, as another offensive player. When his man doubles Gorey, there's going to be an opportunity to rebound it. But he's going to have to improve the three-point shooting. And he's the type of guy. I remember he missed, I think, four free throws out of four. I think it was at San Jose State. And he had a great game otherwise. And Paul asked him after the game, hey, what about that going 0 for 4 from the line? And rather than make any excuse or come up with something, he says, no, it just means I have to get in the gym more. So he's a guy who knows how to improve. And according to both Vance and John Welch, if they call practice and if they say we're going to do something at 11, he'll show up at 10. So he's a guy who can improve. And then once he does those things, then I think you're right. As a passer, he's going to be able to expand his game even further. His ceiling he had 21 last night. He's certainly one of the best players in the league. And his ceiling is almost unlimited.
Well, you and I've talked about it, Jack. And look, I know I've been told by people around the program that as long as Vance is still there, that Gorey will be there. I trust him on his word. But Jack, as we've talked before, this is a freshman. This is a guy who has tremendous athletic skills, and he has the one thing you got to have. He is absolutely fearless. Okay, he does not care who else is on the floor. Nobody intimidates this guy. The moment is not too big for him. And as you and I have talked, in this stark reality of college basketball at this particular time in 2026, all it takes is one gigantic checkbook somewhere. And I'll say it one more time to you, Paisan. People that haven't planned on leaving, Kennedy, the All-America pitcher, best pitcher in softball, $600,000 offer to stay at Stanford. Everybody would have said a Stanford education and $600,000 a year and a chance to play at the highest level. Of course she's staying, until Texas Tech said, how about $1 million a year? And I bring it up because as much as people tell me Gorey is going to stay, and I hope they're right, Jack, if somebody backs up the Brinks truck, since just a small, small percentage of guys ever play the game for pay at the professional level, how in hell can you turn it down? How?
Well, yeah, sure. And couple that with the fact that he's about 150 pounds. So you've got people who are saying, you know what, can you imagine how this guy would be if he was 175?
Yep. You know, if he's willing to hit the gym, he can be.
His ceiling is so high.
The Moses Malone line, Jack. You know?
Well,
Dick Vitale said,
"Ceiling is so high,
guy.
And so is his ceiling for NIL money." That's the unfortunate part.
But as far as staying, I brought up Moses Malone because you and I talked about it. Dick Vitale had a camp once in Florida with high school kids. And he said there was one skinny kid from Virginia. He said he didn't know who it was. He said they broke for lunch. Everybody went for lunch. And this kid stayed and threw the ball off the backboard and rebounded by himself as though he was in the seventh game of the NBA Finals. He said, I come to find out it's this kid named Moses Malone from Petersburg, West Virginia. And he said, Moses, why don't you go to lunch? He said, because when it comes to rebounding, you can't score it unless you get it. And he said, I knew this kid was going to be special. And nobody, as you know, Jack, was more relentless on the board than the late, great Moses Malone. I bring it up because Gorey appears to have that kind of desire. So if you were in the coaching staff of Fresno State right now, would you be telling him, Deshaun, listen, I know the money's going to be out there. We're going to do everything we can to bring you up to that level if possible. But we're also going to offer you something somebody else can't, the opportunity with our coaching staff to hone your skills, to get everything out of your ability. Does that play at all? Does that resonate at all with players these days?
Well, I think you don't even, I don't even think you mentioned, you know, that we know you're going to get my, everybody, he knows it, his people know it, our guys know it. I think they just got to keep working with him because he has to realize that he owes a lot to this coaching staff in terms of his improvement from the day he stepped on campus last summer to now. And I think he realizes that. And, you know, that other thing isn't going to happen till after the season's over anyway. So you just keep working with him and keep working. And if you can improve, let's say, his three-point shot by the, you know, the next, let's say, four or five games, and he keeps improving his game and he sees how much better, and he's in the weight room and he sees what the strength coach is doing and what, you know, they're doing for him, then, you know, you let the chips fall. I mean, you're not going to be able to match some of these schools with what they're giving because it's, you know, ridiculous. I know when that A.J. Babansa was being recruited,
right,
there was a guy, a coach called one of his people and said, we'd like to recruit A.J. And the guy's first line was, the opening bid has to be at least $5 million. And as you know, he got $7 million to go to BYU.
Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, that you don't even, that's not even a factor. I mean, why even talk about it? Just keep going and hope for the fact that it's going to work. But if you remember, Elijah Price said the same thing last year. Fans kept saying what a great culture guy he was. He loved him, and Price loved being here. And, you know, it just got to where we couldn't afford them, and we couldn't afford them to another conference school. You can imagine, you know, what it's going to be like with if you got some of these power fours coming in. Where I mean, you take a guy from Fresno, Cedric Coward. Cedric Coward left Fresno and went to Willamette, which was a division I don't know what program up in Oregon, and you know they thought, well, that's pretty good. Then he goes to Eastern Washington, which is maybe a step or two above Willamette, but it's at the bottom of Division One. Then he goes to Washington State, and then Duke is offering him $3 million, and he turns it down to go to the NBA, and he's having a pretty good NBA career. But this is a guy coming out of Fresno. Fresno State could have had this guy. I'm sure if Fresno State offered him, he would have turned down Willamette University in Oregon. You know, I think a Division III program, but that's the reality now. I mean, if, you know, if Willamette couldn't keep him from Eastern Washington couldn't keep him from Washington State. Washington State couldn't keep him from Duke, and Duke couldn't keep him from the NBA. So that's today's college basketball.
Jack, we are out of time. I always appreciate the insight. Again, FertigJack@AOL.com. 559-287-3305. Please join the Timeout Club, and I'll leave you with this thought, because I think it'll be a feel-good game on Saturday against Air Force people. I hope people are out of SMC. But there was a kid from Oakland who ended up at Weber State. His name was Damian Lillard, who would have been happy to play here at that time. Those days are since gone, because the Damian Lillards of the world now will find themselves making seven figures because somebody will see them on the internet, and that's all there is to it. And I'm not happy about it, Jack. I know you're not happy about it. We both love college basketball, and it is what it is. And as Vance has said, there is no use complaining about it, and you just got to go out and compete. Anyway, Jack, I appreciate it, my friend, a great deal.
Look forward to next week.
All right. My good friend Jack Furtick will take a break, come back, wrap things up, send you off to Phil, who's at eWorld, at World Ag Expo today. There's also a lot of eWorld festivities in addition to that. But at World Ag Expo in Tulare, we'll get to that after this. We'll take a break. Bulldog Hour continues on this Wednesday on Central Valley Sports Leader, 1430 ESPN. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to 253. Go hand it off to Phil. He is in Tulare today and tomorrow. He was there yesterday as well, as World Ag Expo will continue. He'll have 2 hours today from 3 to 5, and then tomorrow he'll have this time slot because they wrap things up there at 4 o'clock. So he'll have 2 to 4 tomorrow. We'll be back with you on Friday with Jackson, and as I mentioned earlier to our great friend Steve and Clovis, I'll go over everything with Jackson in regard to any updates scheduling-wise for football and all of that when we reconvene on Friday. Right now, I want to remind you about the schedule for both 1430 and 790, courtesy of Ed Dunkel and his great business, Precision Civil Engineering, Planning, Land Surveying, Civil Engineering, Landscape Architecture, Construction Management. It's all there under one roof, 449-4500, or Precision ENG, or Precision Eng, if you prefer, .net. And again, we commend Ed for everything he does for his alma mater, Fresno State, in regard to fundraising through the Lyles College of Engineering on campus. Again, the goal, as always, unify athletics and academics to provide more funding resources to students. It works beautifully, and a lot of those grads come to work for Ed at Precision, and we appreciate all the work he does, not only with his business throughout the valley with infrastructure, but also the terrific fundraising for sports all across the board. Now, as far as the schedule goes, no play-by-play today. The Lakers back to action tomorrow. We do have the Sunbird Sports Show with our friend Paul Metters on our sister station, the Deuce 790, from 6 to 7 tonight, all about Fresno Pacific Athletics. Also, there's baseball and basketball still to come from FPU throughout the spring and, of course, the end of wintertime here, although you wouldn't know that the winter even arrived here at the moment. And we'll see, by the way, what the rain has to offer in the next 7 days or so. Later on in the week, beyond the Fresno Pacific baseball, we do have the All-Star game over the weekend from Orwellian Dome, from Intuit Dome, the home of Steve Ballmer and his Clippers. That'll come up on Sunday, and then we're back with you Monday, and Paul will be back with me, and we'll talk about the Fresno State game against Air Force, which will be played Saturday at SMC. I want to remind you about the regular schedule for shows, normally filled 3 to 6 with his outstanding show, Behind the Bench, including Thursdays at Fashion Furniture with our buddy Rod Avedikian. Best furniture on the planet, nothing like in all of California. The Good Eats of Phil's presence there, that's always guaranteed. And you can always stop by and see Phil, ask him a question, and check out the great furniture. Or you can give him a call on the Lee's Air Hotline, 559-320-1430. You have the President's Day sales going on right now at Fashion Furniture, El Paso, across from River Park. Mentioned Paul Metters with the Sunbird Sports Show on this date, Wednesday, each and every week, but also on Saturday mornings, 10 a.m. to noon, First Ring Sports. You have Central Valley Sports Report, his great and long-running show. We're with you at 2 o'clock each and every weekday. You can reach me, tdad1 at att.net, tdad, the number 1, at att.net. First names are fine. For the station, 1430 ESPNFresno.com, you'll find the live links and podcasts there. Remind you, the Lakers, the Sharks, the A's, the Giants, everything from ESPN Radio through the NBA Finals, everything to the World Series will be on ESPN Radio and all the coverage we have of college athletics from Westwood One. And naturally, we wait for the next football season, and we'll see what happens with the Raiders, 49ers, and Rams. So a lot going on in addition to all the high school coverage we have with Phil and Paul Metters out for play-by-play, high school football, basketball, and baseball. So a lot going on both 1430 and 790. Thanks again to Jorge for his great work on the board today. And thanks, of course, to Jack Furtick for his time. Again, we're off tomorrow. Phil up 3-5 from Tulare at World Ag Expo coming up. He'll have the 2-4 tomorrow. We will see you guys again with Jackson Moore on Friday. This is KFIG Fresno.